Accession number 8171, Reel 10.
Mr. Metal Man, Reel
10.
As you were walking westwards, was Fritz the only person you met?
Yes, Fritz was the only person I met. I had seen others, and some of them might have been Germans. There were people moving around. And, of course, one came close to villages sometimes. You cannot avoid it. And it's flat country and very open country. You see there's some life going on in a village, but you do not dare to come too closely to the village, too close to the village. We were, in a way, camouflaged. We did not walk around in German uniform as such. I think I explained it earlier. I wore a fur coat, a white fur coat, and that was good in the snow. You can see it. I had a black Romanian fur cap on. I got my jack boots were made kind of felt, which did not stick out against the white snow. So if somebody saw us from far away, and even coming close, they could not have decided for sure whether we would have been German or anyone else.
What happened after you got out of the haystack?
Well, there we were. We had a good meal, I think, and we were quite happy. When you are young and you just have got out of a very difficult situation, you see life in rosy colors. Life was good. It was a life of adventure, and here we were in a white Russian plane. Really did not understand our situation, because if I think of it today, if thinking back, to have found myself in a situation like that, in a hostile country where everyone, if he had known or she known whom I was, would have shot me on sight. There was no reason for us to laugh, but we decided to go west, and that is exactly what we did. And there were several other little incidents. I wrote this one down, this incident. That's why I remember it so well in 45, 46, when I was in a prison camp. I wrote it down in German roughly, and I think this is the reason why these stories, even in some detail, stick so well in my memory. Hadn't I written them down, I don't know about memory, but most probably much of it would have gone. So we had some other small incidents. Well, every time it was an incident to look for a place at night. Oh, yes. On that way back, Fritz and I, away from the village, was a small house once. And we just couldn't avoid it. And while we were about 200 yards away or so, the door opened and a woman came out. She looked at us, and then we thought, well, we go over. And anyway, there were certain things in the line of food we wanted. We said something about milk. Would be good now to have some milk or so. So we just did. We went in there and we told her in Russian, "Malako is milk." We wanted some milk, and we spoke a fair amount of Russian. I know she suspected us, but to be Germans, perhaps. But she gave us milk, and so we settled down and sat in that little house. She was on her own. There were two children, I think. And we had a good meal there, and we had milk. That was lovely. In these villages, of course, there's no telephone. There's no way of communication. Before she could have gone to the village and alarmed somebody, there were two German soldiers or so. One must understand the conditions of the Russian countryside at that time in the war. We were pretty safe. Once we were away, and nobody would have sent some some unit or what after us, because there were so many people moving around, surely, at that time in the countryside.
Had you kept your arms with you?
Oh, yes, yes. We both had a rifle and, I think, a pistol as well. long ago, one doesn't remember exactly. But one makes one's plans. One must have enough space for food, and one must have a weapon, and one must have warm clothes. Otherwise, one is lost, and we're stuck by that very basic military human rule, I suppose.
What happened next?
Well, we moved on, I don't know, for how many days. Sooner or later, we knew we would have to meet either German or Russian units somehow, and then we would make up our mind what to do about it. Once we came to a village, and we clearly saw there were Russian troops in there, so no good going in there. But after these days, 3 days, we came to a village, and we heard sounds already during the night. It was dark when we approached the village. We could see the village, but nobody obviously would have been able to see us, two figures in the snow in white. And we thought we heard some voices coming across, and we were pretty sure there were Germans, but we are not absolutely sure. So we waited till daybreak, because to approach a village at night, knowing very well that those in the village, whoever they are nervous too about anything which approaches from outside, we wanted to do it in the open. We realized that would be our best chance, because slowly now we were running out of food, and we had to do something, had to rejoin something or get or become prisoners. There were Germans, all right. We shouted from across. We saw a guard walking around, and we were lying on our bellies in the snow and had worked ourselves forwards towards the village, and then we shouted, "Hello." Hallo in German. And he shouted back. And by the way, he says hello, or the Russians would say hello. By that already we knew he was German, because they too, most of the German soldiers were now clad in white. You couldn't recognize the uniform. And the Russians, of course, too, all winter uniform. I think we shouted, "Are you German?" And he shouted back, and then some other turned up there. And yes, there were Germans, and we said, "We are Germans." And the way they answered back, I think they didn't quite believe us. And then they said, "Losungswort," parole. You know, there is every day in the German army, it was there, there was a Losungswort. Everyone had been told of that word, maybe the word Hammer or Tasse, cup, you know, or Wehrmacht or Kanone, or anything. And if you approached a situation where you weren't quite sure, you said Losungswort, meaning parole, you had to say that, Hammer or what, and then they let you in.
No, password.
Yes, password. And of course, now that is being issued daily, almost daily. Now, we had no idea what the password. We shouted across that we had come from I think we mentioned the place somehow where we had come from, and that 22nd Panzer Division. We don't know the Losungswort, the password. And they said, "Well, throw your arms down, put your hands up, and walk over." And, well, we had no choice. We didn't quite like it. So we left our rifles there and got rid of our pistol, put it all down in the snow, and it was something like 250 yards, perhaps. I don't know, something like that. We were in a ditch then. And we walked over, hands high, and they started shooting over our heads. And it was a very uncomfortable feeling to approach. By that time, there were perhaps 10 dozen soldiers and some others standing around, shooting and shouting. And we shouted back, "Stop that shooting. We are Germans." And then, of course, we approached their lines, and they straight away, they dusted us down, whether we had hidden something. Stupid, how could you have hidden something under those conditions? And of course, then they opened we opened our tunics, and there were our German uniform underneath. And by then speaking, of course, we were clearly Germans. It was okay. And we went back to get our rifles out of the snow. And now we were there, and that was a Kampfgruppe, because the whole situation after the breakthrough, I suppose, had been such that there were very few organized old units still together. There must have been hundreds, thousands of stragglers, and they were being put together into Kampfgruppen. That was something new, I think, at that time. Up to then, I only served in proper units, battalion and regiment and division and an army. This was a Kampfgruppe. Many of them were stragglers. It was kind of an infantry unit, but it had absorbed many others. And now, of course, we were part of it. And there was some officer, a Hauptmann. He was sitting in a house. We had to go in and tell him our stories. And he kind of investigated us, whether we were deserters or what. How did we get away, and what were the circumstances? And we suddenly realized we were walking on thin ice, because in the German army, to be a coward or to be a deserter is a terrible thing, and it is being punished by death. And he really probed me. How did you get away? And my mate Fritz as well, how did you get away? Why is it you on your own? And I was pretty careful in telling him exactly what had happened, because I did not tell him exactly what happened. I did not tell him I left so many wounded there, and I didn't do anything about it, and I jumped into the bunker and put my hat down, and I really don't know what happened outside. He asked me how many tanks and what, and asked me all those things, and I think I made the story such that I really fought to the last and just was lucky to get away, and he had to accept that. And to a point, of course, it was. So now we were part of this Kampfgruppe, and remembering, thinking back, it was called Kampfgruppe Cheka. Later on, I belonged to other Kampfgruppen, because I think he was a major, the leader of that Kampfgruppe was a major, or was he captain, doesn't matter, Cheka anyway was his name. And he was a pretty tough character, this Cheka. I understand he had been a member of the Freikorps after the First World War. The Freikorps was operating, were corps consisting of ex-German soldiers, and they were operating in the East, in Poland, in Lithuania, did they go as far as Russia? I'm not quite sure about that. Their main task was to prevent Bolshevism spreading west. And these army units, they were pretty cruel and brutal. They had that reputation. Many of them went over into the Nazi movement later on. I know in the SA and in the SS, more so in the SA, there were many former Freikorps members, and this Cheka was one, and he was a strong disciplinarian. After a few days, I ran foul of him. My uniform wasn't quite right, or I hadn't saluted. We were in that village there, and I hadn't saluted properly, or what. It was ridiculous. We were in the village, and of course I saluted, but I hadn't done it properly, and he dressed me down there and then, and he punished me by me having to stand guard duty that night, where normally I would have had a good night's sleep. I hated that man. I suppose, under the conditions, he was very, very efficient. He kept this unit, and I think we consisted of something like 150, 200 men. I'm not sure anymore. And there we were in that village.
Were there any other instances of his strict discipline?
There was a stable in that village, and I remember there were always some locked up for one reason or another. And I thought then, under conditions like that, we are all soldiers, and the situation is tough. And to lock somebody up for whatever reason, because they were no criminals, to lock them up, and I did not like that. But Cheka was like that. Anyone who was reported to have said a nasty word to a sergeant or what, and the sergeant reported it to him, he went into clink. A few days. And when you went into clink, you got less food. And it was no pleasure. And you couldn't get out of the whole thing.
Did anybody else grumble about him?
Yes, all of them. Well, the lower ranks. And of course, you had to be careful that nobody of the, like the sergeants or so, should hear about it. But then the sergeants, too, when it came to conditions like that, then one realized the sergeants, they were just elevated soldiers, they were promoted soldiers. They still felt very much with us, and there was this quite a difference between sergeants and officers. There were several officers, of course, as well, lieutenants or so. There were very young ones. Chekhov was in his 40s, I think. And, of course, the whole setup now was that these Kampfgruppen were joined together. There must have been many in that area, or a number in that area, were joined together as a force into what was Manstein's army. Field Marshal Manstein was operating from that area. I think he had his headquarters in Mariupol. Then again, I'm not sure, because Manstein moved around, wasn't known to move around in a special train. Manstein, he was field marshal then already, and he had been in command of the whole operations in the south of Russia at that time, because the Germans had three operational areas, really, in Russia, on this long front. One was centered on Leningrad, the second on Moscow, and the third in the south on Stalingrad. I think Field Marshal Bock was in the middle section. There was a north section, the middle section, the south section. Manstein was the commander of the south section, so the 6th Army came really under him, too. And Manstein's job, given to him by Hitler, of course, was now to get Paulus out of the ring. Now, by this time, we were being told that the 6th Army has been encircled. Up to now, we had no idea. We didn't bother really to think about it, because there was absolutely no way of finding out. I mean, we had no papers or telephone, or nobody could tell us anything. So when we arrived in that village, these were more or less rumors that the 6th Army is locked in, is encircled, and there's been terrible trouble, and we had terrible losses, and the whole thing looked as whether we had been beaten, which meant quite a bit to German soldiers, because up to that time, on the whole, we never really lost a main battle. But we realized Stalingrad, and we knew, all of us, that it was a main battle, because we knew that main forces of our army were engaged there. We realized, we sensed it, and, of course, we all had been beaten and chased about. We did realize that something very dangerous, very difficult, what was going on. And we got kind of instructions at that time from one officer. Several times we were being called together so that we should understand the general situation. I think even that they looked at us as just tools, they nevertheless thought a knowing tool, or at least a brainwashed tool, is better than a thoughtless tool. And we were being told that it would be our job now to get organized here under Manstein, and that we would break into Stalingrad and get Paulus out. That was the general situation. I don't know, we stayed there for a few days, and then we were marching. Now we were infantry, we were walking. We had some vehicles where equipment or so was being put on, and we moved generally east, I suppose. Stalingrad was away, well, perhaps 100 kilometers, I don't know, something like that. And, of course, the River Don was between us and Stalingrad, between us and Paulus' army. We joined up with some other units. Some panzer units joined us again, and luckily, of course, when I arrived in the village, what am I trained at? I was a trained driver, a trained panzer driver. I had to say that, and it was in my paybook. We had to produce our paybook. But I never liked to be a panzer driver. I hated these things. It's a very funny feeling to sit in a panzer. You are, it's like a magnet. Wherever you turn up, and you only turn up at situations which are tough, you draw the fire. You sit in these things, you hardly can look out, and it bangs against you, and you know very well if you are hit by a big enough thing from the outside, that's your lot. And I had seen so many panzers blown up, burned out. I preferred to be with my 2 feet on the ground, and I was quite happy that there were just not enough panzers so that I got a job. And anyway, whenever there was something like that, they were looking for a panzer driver, I was always keeping to the back. The general situation was that we moved on towards Stalingrad. And we crossed the river again. I don't know exactly where that was. It was south of Kalach. It was a pontoon bridge. The general situation where we crossed was southwest of Stalingrad, an area where I never had been before. And we were approaching Stalingrad. And there were some battles. Some fighting was going on. I remember we drove Russians out of a village, set a village alight. Mm-hmm. I remember all that. It was very cold. It was horrible. And one was, we felt disheartened because the whole situation was chaotic. We could sense it. There was no proper moving forward as we had used it before, and we had been driven back now. Our training was like going forward victory, because I remember once during training time in the barracks, somebody mentioned when we had instructions, saying something like, "Ja, Herr Hauptmann, Mr. Captain, but now if we retreat, on a retreat," and the Hauptmann, I remember, blew up, "Retreat? A German soldier mentions this word retreat. What do you think you are? You're a German soldier. There's only one way, that is victory, and that's going forward. I don't allow you to speak of retreat." I remember that. And now, of course, the chickens were coming home to roost. Now, there had been retreat, and we all had been very disorganized, and we hadn't been prepared in any way for retreat. We never have been told what happens when you are on your own like that, as we had been, Fritz and I. Because Fritz and I now were together. That was the only good thing. The only two, I only knew Fritz. I knew nobody else. And we had been in that situation, and we realized that in that situation, all the army regulations and what we had learned or so, that was just nothing. We had to make up our own plans. And suddenly, that we had, and certainly that we had found ourselves in a situation, it gave us a certain feeling of not wanting to listen too much now to army orders. We realized we had been let down by army orders, and there was a large amount of bad discipline going on now in these Kampfgruppen. And I can imagine Chekhar, not being a stupid man, he realized that. He had a rather indisciplined Haufen, as we called it, heap, under his command. We all had experienced something which was by which we were relying on our own initiatives, while beforehand we were just obeying orders. We never questioned an order. But we had changed somehow. The whole morale, the whole attitude amongst German soldiers, I noticed it especially in this Kampfgruppe, had changed. To get an order from someone, you question the order now, even if you not openly said, oh no, Herr Hauptmann, this is not what you're telling me. But amongst yourself afterwards, you said, here, you know, doing a thing like that is bloody stupid. We have done that before, and we dropped a clanger there. And sometimes we acted in that way.
What kind of things would you question?
When, for instance, to attack a village, and you had sometimes a stupid commander. I mean, Chekhar did not give over all commands. There were some other officers. They just say, so-and-so many go to the right, so-and-so many go to the left. You stand over there, you shoot from there, and we attack from the center or so. That, just thinking of something that we said, that's idiotic, to just go from the center. That's old army rules from Napoleon, to attack a village from the center. We got to wait either till the darkness comes in, or otherwise we lose so many. Or, you know, we might get killed. And there were some, I think, some refused to carry out orders. And then, of course, Chekhov puts them again into clink. Nobody was shot in that Kampfgruppe, not. But it sometimes came close to that, that one refused an order by just arguing.
Were there any other examples of indiscipline?
Yes, generally the whole situation had become very much looser. I remember once we had received some lorry full of food, and we were very short of food, and then it had been found that in the night, and they suspected the guards had pinched food out of the lorry, things like that, which was a bad thing. After all, now we were a Kampfgruppe, this was our food, and that some individuals now should steal. But all these things happened. There was a general loosening of the former very tight discipline. And I can imagine that officers, they must have worried about that. Oh, yes, I remember we had to line up in that Kampfgruppe one day, and Chekhar came, and it was unusual. Why did we have to line up? And he said it has come to his ears that some Bolshevik tendencies had arisen in his Kampfgruppe here. And then he said, Obergefreiter Keil, raustreten. Obergefreiter Keil, step out. And a bloke I knew now quite well, Keil, he stepped out. And he said, this man is a communist. This man, he has made here speeches. He had told others that the Russians are right and that we have no right here to do what we are doing. And he went over to Kyle and beat Kyle in the face. Kyle, of course, couldn't do anything about it. He fell down, I think the second time he beat him. And Kyle was white, like snow, I think. He expected perhaps to be shot for that. But Chekhov said, you're very, very lucky to get away with this, Kyle. Now, if something like that happens again, that will be your lot. And I remember we walked away, and Kyle wanted to talk to me in order to give himself some confidence. And I didn't want to talk to Kyle. I thought, if somebody sees I'm talking to Kyle, they think I might be some of them too, which I wasn't. And